Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joshua. What's going on?
Oh my gosh, it's been quite a week, actually. We're busy, busy.
Oh, remember? Do you remember what it was like to be busy?
I know, right? Things like, stall for so long and then it's like 100 miles an hour. Yeah, it's been quite a busy week. A week ago, let's see, I was just thinking about all the stuff I did this week. I went to the Scream 25th anniversary showing on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the new Chucky, the debut of the Chucky television series.
Okay.
We had American Horror Story night, and then I did an all-day, like, horror hang with A Nightmare on Elm Street, The Silence of the Lambs, and then Halloween Kills. So it's been, like,
wow,
a full-on horror week.
You here. Did it all.
Yeah, not to mention taking care of all my classwork and going to school.
What a hardship.
I know, right? We still haven't put up hardly any decorations, but we, have been watching lots of movies.
Well, that's good. Good for you.
Yeah, it was a good time. The Scream 25th anniversary was really fun. I was disappointed that they didn't put the trailer. I mean, it would have made sense to put the trailer for the new Scream 5, ostensibly, with that, but they didn't. But it was still fun to go and see the film in the theater because I'd never done that before. I've never seen Scream on the big screen. So that was fun.
Was there a lot of laughter?
Yeah, I mean, it was packed. Like, the theater was full.
Really?
Yeah, which was fun. So, it was a good time, watching it with other people. And, yeah, of course, there was laughter. And, it's a funny movie. It's darkly humorous. So it was really fun. And even though it's the film came out in 96, 25 years we're celebrating. Obviously, a lot of people in the room had seen it. There were lots of Scream t-shirts, Scream masks, ghost face masks and all of that. It was very much there was a fan base there, but still, they jumped and screamed and laughed at all, the places that they probably, and me too, even though I've seen it a million times, it is a different experience to see it in the theater. The only downside was because it was so busy, there were people sitting right next to me. There was this couple and they were annoying as fuck. I just kept wishing they would leave. They were talking to each other. They were making out. I think they were doing other things. And I'm like, I'm sitting right. I mean, they were right against me, and his leg kept bumping me and stuff. And I'm just like, you fucking straight people, you're not okay. You don't need to do this here. You could have stayed out in your car. You can go somewhere else. And so, yeah, for some reason they did decide. I mean, maybe it was me just willing it, but I kept sitting there and being like, I wish you would just fucking leave. Just realize you want to be in a private space maybe and go there away from me. They got up about 2/3 away, in the movie and left and never came back. And I was very happy so that I could enjoy the final act. The third act of the film starts when they get to Stu Mocker's house for the party. That's when they decide to leave, when everything's going to get really,
when everything goes off the rails. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was very happy that they left.
were they talking about the film, or were they just talking?
I don't know. And it was that kind of talking where she was whispering a lot to him, but whisper talking. So it wasn't it's I could hear them, but I couldn't understand what they were saying.
Oh, like a stage whisper, hello, what's going on?
Yeah, it was just gross. It was just really gross. So it was really kind of like, this is not the tea. You could have stayed home and watched this movie for free, in your bedroom or something together. You didn't need to bring all of this mess out in public, for the rest of us.
Do you think that something about the film just really got her going, really got them going about it?
I mean, they was right away, because first they got there and they were kind of complaining because of where the seats were. And they're like, well, let's just move down. I'm like, you can't, this is all sold out. I was like, all of those seats are, this whole row is taken. So whatever seats
they're complaining about, they chose those seats. The fact that people complain about their seats and they're the ones who chose them, first of all,
Well, and the seats were already sold because when I bought my seat, the two seats next to me were empty, but the rest of the row was already sold out. So when they chose the seats, they could obviously see, but they were like, oh, we're going to go sit in the middle. I'm like, okay, well, you're probably going to have to move, but I don't care. Whatever, you know, do you. That's a conversation that I'm not going to have. You can have that with whoever actually bought the seats. But, you know, they sat down next in the seats they actually bought next to me. And like right away, the whole time they were just making out and talking and that like, you know, it was just gross. I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to stab you.
It's going to be that scene.
You know,
from...
I've seen the movie, but it's like, I'd never seen it that way. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, it was just annoying more than anything. Like, you know, good for you. It's cute. It's, you know, the whole premise of horror, like making lovers cling closer in the dark. Love it. You know, it's adorable. But it was also like, we are in fucking public. Like, take this somewhere else. Rude.
You were gonna do them the way that they did Brenda in Scary Movie, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You on candid camera. I got you on camera.
Yeah. Or like Jada Pinkett Smith in Scream 2. Which you've not seen yet, I don't think.
I have not seen yet, yeah. But I know.
Well, we'll do that
happen.
Soon. I think with the 25th anniversary coming out, I think it comes out tomorrow, the Steelbook and like the whole new release of it, Tuesday, it should be out. So yeah, maybe this will be a good time. Maybe sometime in November we'll do Scream 2. I know we have a couple people wanting to do it. So like, you know, we're so lucky that people want to talk about movies, but then they all want to talk about the same movie. It's like, I feel bad. Like I have to give the candy bar to one of the kids, but not all the kids. You know?
My favorite, this is such a call out, but you know what, whatever, come for me. My favorite is when people who are like, oh, I would, you guys should definitely do this movie. And it's like, well, we've already done that like 2 years ago. Yeah. So you obviously don't listen to the show.
Well, you know what's funny? Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've been talking enough. Let me give the floor.
I'm reclaiming my time. It's just, to me, it's just like, well, you know, no offense, but we have done that. Yeah. So you just expose yourself. You just told on yourself that you don't listen to the show, but it's fine. You don't have to listen to the show, but you know, like, it's just like, oh, you're like, oh yeah, you guys should do The Exorcist. I'm like, yeah, season one.
Well, you know, I was thinking, like, now that we have actually figured out, we know that it's coming up our 5-year anniversary. We started Halloween 2016. We looked back, like, because we don't even listen to our own show, apparently. We have no idea how long we've been doing it or when we started. But we have pinned it down that we will be celebrating 5 years. And I think at this point, we probably can revisit some films, you know, especially with new perspectives from people who want to. Maybe it would be okay, you know. I don't know. I mean, we're not desperate for content, certainly. There's so much horror out there. Every time I turn around, there's more stuff. Or I'm like, oh, right, that movie. We could totally talk about that. So it's like I have at least content, you know, planned and thought of for, you know, another year. So we just keep on trucking. But I don't know. Sometimes when people bring something up, it's like, well, what might they bring to the table? You know, I mean, it was us talking about 5 years ago, some things now that you have more of a perspective on certain films, you know, which is why I like doing like what we're doing with this series, doing this folk horror stuff, because I feel like, I mean, you saw Midsommar before you saw The Wicker Man, but now you probably kind of see those echoes, or like in this film that we watched today, Apostle, you know, you probably see that connection to The Wicker Man and the even further like connection to Blood on Satan's Claw. You know, so I don't know. Sometimes like our own perspectives have sort of changed over the years and maybe we could revisit something. But you know what? Again, this is production talk that people don't care about.
Yeah.
So that was the Scream screening. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. Chucky was also fun. I am curious where the season will go. You didn't watch it, right?
It's in my queue.
Okay. All right.
So I have it queued up and recorded for me to watch, but
yeah, maybe let a couple episodes go and then watch it.
I'm doing right now because I like to do that with, you know, shows that are live. I like to give it like the first few and then just have a bunch to like binge in an evening and then, you know, live my life for 3 weeks and then binge more.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, anymore, it's kind of how you have to do it because we're so damn busy. So much going on. So much happening, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yins and mans. Let's see. The hangout with my friends and our friends. We have mutual friends with A Nightmare on Elm Street, which was the first, and The Silence of the Lambs were both the first time that they had each seen those movies. So that was kind of cool. You know, it's always fun to be in the room with people that are like, oh God, oh God.
See, that was so fun. That must have been so fun. Plus, there's season one, their original Fright School movies. It would have been, did you record anything on your phone? We can put mine for content later. But
no, but I mean, I would totally be down to have both of those people on, you know, to discuss horror. The one, our friend, he's on like his own journey of horror. You know, he's like watching all these classic films, stuff he's never seen before. So he's like Joe season one.
Yeah, he told me that he really loves, and we're not saying his name because we haven't been given permission. So,
yeah,
but
yeah.
So this, I know I hate it when people say that too, but like he told me that he actually really loves the genre. And so now with like coming to American Horror Story every week and all that, he's kind of like diving in a lot more.
Nice. Yeah,
which is great. What was the discussion?
Put up a giant list of stuff that he's like, I've never seen any of these, and it was all stuff right out of our like first and second seasons. I'm like, yeah, I own all of those movies. We could totally hang out and watch all of those.
Yeah. What was the discussion like after seeing Silence of the Lambs?
Well, my friend, she had just read the novel. She read Red Dragon, and then she read The Silence of the Lambs, and so that was the
plan. Red Dragon is technically first.
It is the first book. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when she said she was reading it, and then she was like, "Oh, and I've never seen the movie." I'm like, "Oh, can we please, like, when you finish it, let's like watch the movie together." So there was like some like conversation like during the film, just talking about the differences in the book, but also like just the a lot of it that's the same. I mean, it's a really well adapted film. Yeah, as we've discussed on the show before, like it's just, you know, they kind of took the book and boom, you know, they had a manuscript, they had a screenplay. Outside of minor changes and, you know, just kind of thinning it out a little bit. But we, that's probably a bad pun. That's bad wording. But anyways, she enjoyed it, you know, thought it was a really good movie. You know, we did kind of just talk throughout the film about it, you know.
Serious
conversation, especially because we finished it like around 8:30, and then I wanted to get into Halloween Kills, and you know, it's like these days we're asleep at like 9, so it's like we have to get to the next film, so we didn't have too much time. So I am hoping to catch up with her again about it, you know, now that she's had like time to process it and, you know, kind of put the film into her brain, so to speak.
I'm really looking forward to doing a little bit of your marathon, your Halloween marathon on Halloween Day.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
That time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you show up, Joe Flakerin, Flaky Flake, Flaky Joe.
I know, I feel so bad. I've become a flake. I've become a snowflake.
You're a flake. Dealer, you've always been a flake. If you insist on frightening people, do it with your sculpture. No, I'm teasing it. You always have good reasons to flake. Well, I mean, good reasons to normal people, like family bullshit. And, you know, you want to see your boyfriend. Ugh, gross. but it was fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what you think of Halloween Kills. If you watch it, I don't know what part, when you say like part of the marathon, it's like, when are you coming? Like, are you just coming for a Halloween H2O and then you're leaving?
No, I'm coming. I think I'm going to come for I'm going to start with Halloween H2O. So that way I can be there also when you do, the little interlude with Chelsea for Chelsea's picks.
And
then I want to watch the canon again. So,
okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. That'll be a fun, That'd be a fun watch. Maybe next year I'll do like the worst and we'll watch like, I'll let everybody, maybe everybody can vote on which Halloween movies they think are the worst ones. And then we'll just watch those. I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to torture myself or others with that. It was fun to post the, you know, cause I shared the timeline in like the invite and on like Facebook, like just so people understand just how convoluted like the Halloween franchise is. This is why I'm kind of doing it the way I'm doing it. So, you know, cause people that might look at it go, what the fuck, why are you doing it this way? You know, but it's like, I felt like I needed to explain and show, cause like casual horror fans or people that maybe have seen some of the movies or know who Michael Myers is, maybe don't realize like how much, you know, the franchise has changed and shifted through the years, that it's a, you know, it's a choose your own adventure book now.
It's like, which way do you want to get? It's the multiverse, you know, yeah. It's the Halloween cinematic universe.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm mostly bummed you weren't able to make it just because then we could have talked more about it on today's show, but instead we'll have to save it. I will just suffice to say that, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was gory. There's like a queer couple in it that I was like, oh my gosh, this is like Jeffrey and I, in a way, some of the stuff that they do and say, is, I'm just like, oh, this is hilarious. And also that it very much feels like the middle part of the story.
Okay.
You know, so I'd say you don't, you know, I mean, I feel like Halloween, the first one they made in 2018 could have been, it's like a state, like could have been on its own. Maybe, you know, if they didn't want to make any others, they just wanted to like leave it open-ended that they burned the house down and we can all just say, hey, Michael Myers burned to death and they went on with their lives. I felt it was a complete thought in and of itself. This one definitely feels like the middle, you know? So I don't think it feels like a complete thought.
Yeah, that's the thing about like the immediate sequel in a trilogy, because it's always gonna like Empire Strikes Back. That's my least favorite movie because it feels like I have to wait.
This feels very much like, oh fuck, I gotta wait a whole nother year to finish this.
So my prediction is in Halloween Ends, which is the third film, they're gonna take the mask off and it's gonna be John Carpenter.
Ooh. Should we put money on that?
let's put money on that. Let's Vegas odds. Wouldn't that be something? She's going to take the mask off and it's Malika Cod.
Ah, there we go. Yeah. The whole time fucking with her contract.
Yeah. Or it's her husband. It's Christopher Guest. It's just
even better. You know, why hasn't Christopher Guest ever made like a horror film? I think that would be really fucking funny if he took on like a horror like mockumentary. I think that'd be delightful.
Like, especially people like in a house.
You know, they have a thing where they don't work together and that's like what's made their relationship successful, because they've been together since the 80s, right? Something like that. You know, it's, that's a really long lasting relationship. So I know that she's commented before that they don't work together. But I think that'd be kind of fun. Like, I mean, I'm sure with Jamie behind it, like they could get anybody, you know, any horror. Like, I mean, it would just be really funny to get like tons of like horror cameos and people and just do something really silly. I think it'd be fun through Christopher Guest's lens. But
it could be like it could be like a documentary about the making of a film like Halloween. And yeah, it's all the like older that. Folks.
Yeah, I think that could be really fun. That was definitely a thing. This is why I'm glad that hopefully the people who come will watch all three of the movies, the 78, the 2018, and Halloween Kills, because there are some really cool moments in Halloween Kills that kind of recreate events or like events in the immediate aftermath of the original Halloween that are not part of Halloween 2, but kind of part of this new canon. They also are bringing back actors at, you know, from the original film, which is also really cool because that kind of echoes back. We were watching that interview with Jamie Lee Curtis when they made Halloween H2O, because she was like in awe of the fact that after 20 years, many of the people that had made the film and were involved in the film had gone on to continue working and were bigger stars than they were then, of course, and you know, that they were alive and they could all get together and make this movie. Well, that's kind of still a little true for, you know, Halloween, you know, this 40 years later now, even though, I mean, I know Deborah Hill is gone, but, you know, one of the co-writers, But majority of a lot of the people that they are alive and could come in and like do cameos in this film. And that was really cool. So I do feel like there's some fan service, which is nice in that way.
So I have you watched the movies that made us?
Not Netflix. Yet. I did see that they did a horror one, or at least I know Jamie Lee Curtis was involved.
So yeah, they did. I watched the one for Halloween.
Yeah.
And it's a really cool, fascinating story. Like I would love there to be like a movie like Disaster Artist. Like it's a movie about making a movie. I would love to see that with this because it just looked like they had so much fun making it.
I should watch that. Maybe I'll watch that today before, because we're going to Not Scary Farm tonight. I'm so excited. We haven't been able to go, and you know, this is like 2 years, obviously, with COVID. Mm-hmm.
I love that for you.
Yeah. So, but I'll have a little bit of time after today's recording. Maybe I'll put that on. That'll be a nice watch. Mm. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
The other thing, because it's all about me, that I did this week that I want to just pump. So for our literary listeners, you know, who enjoy reading, I had picked up this book a couple months ago, Rovers by Richard Lang. I'm not sure if I talked to you about it, but Stephen King, I saw him quoted somewhere saying that he thought it was one of the best vampire books he'd read since Let the Right One In.
Mm.
Which for me is like very high up there. I mean, that's one of my favorite vampire novels with Lost Souls by Poppy Z. Bright. So I thought, man, that's pretty high praise. So I picked it up thinking like, well, I'm going to read it. And then of course it sat around for a couple months because that's how it is with my gigantic to be read pile. Mm-hmm. But I picked it up yesterday and decided to start reading it because I finished this book called See No Stranger by Valerie Kaur for my Resistance book club that I'm in, which, you know, you know all about. And so after that, I come home and I like was just like, oh, I have some time to kill. I think I'm going to read the first couple pages in it because I needed a new like a horror book. I haven't really read, you know, anything really scary this month that was new. And I started reading it and like all of a sudden I'd read 35 pages so fast. And then right now I'm at 154. I'm just like devouring it, like, you know, pun intended. It's really a cool book that I just want to kind of put out there for listeners if you haven't heard about it. This guy, Richard Lang, I guess he writes mostly like kind of crime fiction. So this was sort of a departure for him to do this like vampire novel. But it's like, it was also described as like Of Mice and Men meets The Lost Boys.
Okay.
Which I thought was kind of cool. It's set in 1976, but obviously it flashes back to, you know, different points in the past. Cause you know, some of the vampires in it are, you know, rovers, they're called rovers. You know, so it's kind of, it has four different points of view that, which I also really like. It's they're two brothers and, the one brother was turned first and then came and turned his younger brother, later in life who had aged to be older than him. So that's kind of cool, you know, kind of a neat story device. But the brother's kind of like Lenny from Of Mice and Men, you know, they keep calling him simple-minded and such. So we have the perspective of Jesse, that's the one brother, and then the other brother, Edgar. You get his perspective, which is really interesting, like chapters from his point of view as this sort of like simple-minded 100-year-old vampire. It's just weird. It's something I've never really read before. Simple-minded in their terms. He has some sort of mental, they haven't really gotten into it again. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're like, you know, 100 years old. So it could just be that he's kind of just a, kind of like a farm boy from that time who just, you know, I don't know. They haven't really clarified, but anyway, so there's those points of view. And then there's a point of view of a father who is hunting for somebody who killed his son. Who, you know, obviously, mm-hmm. it's these vampires. Some of these vampires might have done it. That's kind of part of the mystery. And then the other part of the book is about this like roving band. They're like a motorcycle gang of vampires, which I really love. And it's just a really cool book. And I haven't been able to put it down. Like even today, I wanted to like call you and be like, let's just cancel today because I'm reading this book. It's really good. I don't want to be interrupted. Since I can't put it down, it's really good. So I just want to throw it out there. It's a really fun vampire read. It's creepy. It's got stuff going on in it that I personally have not read in vampire fiction. I've seen it. It reminds me, it's like, it is sort of like Of Mice and Men, definitely has that element, You know, especially like some of the Dust Bowl stuff of their memories. It's, you know, got a little bit of that Lost Boys element, a little bit of like From Dusk Till Dawn, Near Dark. Definitely. It feels a lot like Near Dark. Yeah. So I'm just enjoying that. I wanted to throw that out there for our friends who want to read. Read.
So that's why our episode is ending now. So Joshua can go and read the rest of Rovers.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there because it's very fun. Obviously, the other big book news this week for me was The Book of Magic by Alice Hoffman came out, which is the sequel to Practical Magic, which was published 26 years ago. So we're finally getting a sequel after two prequels. I've been very happy about that. I've been waiting. I first read Practical Magic when I was 18. So for me, it's been 18 years waiting for this sequel. And that book, I'm trying to go slow. I've read the first 10 pages, but it's like I'm trying to savor it. I'm trying not to like read it too fast because it's like I waited so long to revisit these characters. So, you know, just trying to take my time. So, Joe, we got a few minutes left in the beginning. What have you been up to?
Oh, goodness. I mean, nothing really. I mean, just I've not been able to make it to American Horror Story viewing, so I've been catching up on my own.
Nice.
I think that I really kind of wish that they had just a couple more episodes for this, for the Death Valley of it all. Just because I want there to be a little bit more. I want there to be a little bit more with the with that part of the story.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, it's just been, you know, hanging out with family, hanging out with Jimmy Kins, hanging out with, you know, just working, you know, making this new job work and seeing how it's going and stuff. So very excited to get to the tail end of October because I feel like that's when all the spooky will ramp up.
Yeah. Awesome. It's been weird. It just hasn't like, I don't know if it's just like because of COVID and everything else that's going on. Like it hasn't really felt 100% again, you know, like last year, it felt a little empty, obviously, like Halloween just didn't feel like it normally does. And this year it's kind of, I feel it's a little bit of the same. Like I'm not seeing, I don't know, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just not, because I'm in class so much that maybe I'm just not out in the world, but it does feel a little less like, I don't know what the right word is. You know, of like, it just doesn't feel as spooky season-ish as it could. So I'm hoping by next year, it'll feel more like a return to normal. But I still feel like there's still a lot of reticence, obviously, because we're still in the pandemic. I mean, you know, again, like not to like shame people, like definitely people should still be, you know, being mindful. But it's like, it would be nice to get out of this because I just, I still feel like there's a little reticence to go out and to do things and, you know, even though I was just at a, like a packed movie house for Scream.
Well, how about this? Let me offer this interpretation of your feelings. What if the world has caught up to how spooky you are for most of the year? That now it's just reached this kind of equilibrium of you don't feel it's scary season because now everything is caught up to how scary you usually are. So it just looks normal to you.
That's a good, you know, hey, that's a good
There's a stasis shift. There.
That's nice, Joe. That's really nice. Look at you. Do you want to be a therapist? Maybe you should join me. Yeah. And again, I think it's just because we're so busy. Like, I mean, I think if I had decorated and stuff more, I would probably feel more in tune with it all. So yeah, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just, it is a perspective. I just need to shift it out. Thank you, Joe. Thank you for that, Dr.
You're welcome. Do you receive that?
I do. They should give you a Oprah-sponsored talk show.
Oh, no, please. No, I don't think I've committed enough crimes against humanity to get one of those.
Ah, there we go. I like it. Delightful. All right, well, we'll be right back to discuss Apostle.
Hey everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality.
All right, welcome back. So we are this week discussing Apostle 2018. This is a Netflix film, right? It wasn't just streaming on it. It's actually like produced or distributed by Netflix, huh?
Yeah. Yes.
Produced by XYZ Film, Severn Screen, One More, One Productions. But yeah, distributed by Netflix. You know, continue our folk horror journey here this week. Yeah, this is kind of like, again, very much sounds a little like the plot of The Wicker Man. You know, this dude, this British man, Thomas, is traveling to this remote Welsh island to rescue his sister, who's been like ransomed. She was like kidnapped and is being ransomed by these islanders. And of course, because, you know, what else do people on islands do, especially white people on Welsh islands? You know, they have a cult. They're a big old cult. And he has kind of wandered into the midst of them as pretending to be like a convert to them. But obviously he wants to save his sister. And, you know, hilarity ensues. Hashtag. Joe, what did you think of Apostle?
This movie was fucked up.
Yes.
This movie was very fucked up. There were parts where, so, you know, there are parts where I'm watching this where I'm like, is this the new Inside? Is this the new Inside? But I ultimately, I don't know. It was a lot for me, and I was like kind of wincing and cringing at the violence, which, you know, is not. I mean, I think I'm okay with like slashery type violence, but this was just a very kind of like cruel and intimate violence, which I'm starting to see. It seems to be the intimacy of the violence seems to be something that is in a lot of these folk horror films, because it's dealing, you know, the theme that I keep walking away with is that it's dealing with the kind of cruelty and violence of belief. And so it has no choice but to elicit those types of feelings in me. But yeah, it was a very strange film, to watch. I'm still trying to decide if I liked it or not. So yeah, but it was very strange, and it was a lot. And yeah, I also couldn't like, because like the folk horror that we've watched so far are these slow burns, right? You know, they're very slow, and this one was more manic, and it was like, especially because the way that Dan Stevens played Thomas was just like this very manic character, and like, you know, the accent was a little histrionic and overwrought, but like I also felt that was part of the intensity of him. So it was interesting, because I was like, okay, it's a 2-hour film. It's gonna be, I was settling in for like a slow burn, and it didn't feel that way most of the film. It felt very, it was moving, and it was like there were moments where you're on the edge of your seat, like kind of like Hereditary almost, like, because Hereditary wasn't, it was a slow burn in some places, but it was unnerving for most of it. So
yeah, there's a real sense of dread that's palpable in that film that's also, I think, present here.
Yeah,
and it is different, like, than you know, The Wicker Man. I think this has a little bit more in common with like The Witch, you know, when we
yes
that mm-hmm. It's a little darker in tone. You know, the conversation is not exactly the same, because in like The Wicker Man, obviously, like Howie comes to the island, you know, in search of this missing child, you know, who mm-hmm. may be murdered or whatnot. And he's like very staunchly a man of faith, but he's very like self-denying and, you know, kind of in this space of like puritanical kind of behavior. I mean, I know he's Catholic, so obviously there's that, you know, kind of, you know, suffering, you know, this sort of like, you know, damn, we have to, I'm going to suffer till I die so I can mm-hmm. have like, mm-hmm. you know, my heaven. And he's met with these villagers who are like, they're joyful. Like they are having a good time because they are fucking everything and they are dancing with everything. And, you know, they are just, you know, ecstatic, like people, you know, so like that, there's like that tension of his, like, you know, very buttoned up kind of life philosophies mix, you know, kind of clashing against this like joyous sort of celebratory kind of faith, even though it's rooted in human sacrifice.
Yeah.
as is his, I mean, as is like the Catholic, you know, as is mm-hmm. Christianity, you know,
it's definitely rooted in like a sacrifice. Corporal sacrifice. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so you kind of have that story there. So here it's like, he's coming, Thomas is coming, as we learn throughout the film, with a, in a crisis of faith. He's like abandoned his faith after being like tortured. And what was mm-hmm. he was like a missionary.
So, can we talk about that for a little bit? So he was, it sounded like he was a priest. And he was a missionary in China, in Peking.
During the Boxer Rebellion.
Boxer Rebellion.
Yeah, and so this was 1899 to 1901, anti-imperialist uprising in China, anti-foreign, anti-Christian. Go ahead. Sorry. Just so, give some foundation.
So on that, right, like, I mean, I didn't really feel sorry for him. Because I was like, oh, you colonizer religion, you know, like I was not like remotely sorry for the pain that was inflicted on essentially a colonizer. Because that's the other thing, too, about like the people who bring the gospel are also people who are the agents of imperialism. Like historically, I know it is with my ancestors. I know it is with, you know, many ancestors. And so to see like this, I was just like, yeah, that was a terrible thing that happened to you, but it also, like, you should have known better. Like, I think they could have done a little... I think what they wanted to communicate was the fact that he was, like, a true believer. Like, he really felt that he was going there to spread God's love. Yeah. But at the same time, like, those people weren't asking for it, right?
Right. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say, this is the case of most missionary missions. It's not that people are, or mission trips, you know, it's not that the people there are like begging for Jesus to come. It's people going, we have to go over there and like make sure these people know Jesus if it kills them, you know?
Yeah. Which is the exact opposite of like this, the faith of the prophet Malcolm, right? Like this faith of the goddess, because they have to go there if they want it. Like they're not, you know, they're holding prayer meetings and things like that, but like they are not, like there's no active proselytization as there is with like organized Christianity at this time. Like,
yeah,
like he was reaping. He basically got caught up in the, you know, the like being seen as like this imperializer, this colonizer, threatening a way of life in the same way that, like, you know, he. It was interesting.
He was still a priest, yes.
When he was still a priest. And so,
whatever it was, he was.
So when that was revealed to be like the thing, like the rub of like his existence and why people thought he was dead and stuff, I was just like, oh, that's so strange. Like, I also felt like, didn't really feel sorry for him.
Well, of course, I mean, you know, we're not, I don't even know if we're like meant to. I mean, it's supposed to be like that. Obviously, he survived this like horrifying event. That no matter where he was coming from, it's obviously, you know, a terrible thing to happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, on a body. That was actually one of the most beautiful scenes. I actually wrote it down because, again, it also echoed The Wicker Man. You know, because you had that big cross burning and it collapsed. Mm-hmm. You know, as they burned, like as they seared, branded him with like a cross. I was like. Mm-hmm. wow, this is gorgeous. Like, just the composition of that sequence was really beautiful. And also, again, really echoed the Wicker Man in that, you know, in that sort of the falling of the head of the Wicker Man at the end of it, and the sun coming up, and this, like, in the darkness as the, you know, I was just like, whoa, that was intense. Like, I was just, like, glued to that, like, moment, because it was beautiful. But yeah, that's, it is sort of interesting. So, like, they, to take, so Malcolm, Quinn, and Frank sort of founded this island. I think they were criminals. It's very, it's
they're
like
convicts.
Australia.
Yeah.
It's like this Australian kind of thing. So, like, they come to this island, you know, they're convicts, and they are, like, welcomed by this goddess to some degree. And then, of course, they subjugate her. And then that's obviously why, like, the tension of the film is also predicated on the fact that she, you know, they're, like, torturing her, and she doesn't want to give them a harvest. She doesn't want to, like, make the island this wonderful place if they're going to, like, torture her for it, you know, when she would have given it freely. I think it's interesting because that is, that echoes into, like, their faith of what you're saying. It's like, these people have to come to this island willingly and want to be there because they don't want to necessarily proselytize, you know, but they're still, like, using her against her will. It's a, you know, as, again, they have some hypocrisy issues, as humans often do in their religious faiths. So yeah, it is kind of another, I think that has been a big theme in the conversation of folk horror, is like, even though we talk about, like, rural landscapes and, like, you know, these kind of pastoral images and, like, what horror hides there, or, like, cults, or these sort of natural religions, we keep finding conversations about colonization, you know, and about, you know, the destruction of the natural world, or at least the attempt to subjugate it, and what the consequence of against humanity. I think if that's even, you know, another, like, major theme of these movies, and is, I think, is very present here, obviously. I mean, their goddess is basically Mother Nature. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an accident to, like, make her a woman that they're subjugating. And then Quinn, his whole thing is, like, we gotta, like, impregnate all the women and, like, feed the babies to her. Like, that's his, like, idea of, like, running things. So again, we find in, you know, in these sorts of religions like that, the clash is often against powerful women, you know, and the power of, like, the sacred feminine.
Yeah. And it was also, like, once you, you know, towards the end of the film, when you figure out that, like, oh, they basically imprisoned her in this tree, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting because, like, that's kind of like what religion's functional purpose is to some, like, I mean, in some ways a very practical but also sort of cynical way of saying it, it's like the religion's functional purpose is for people to have, you know, words for the unexplainable, or to have command over the cosmos in some way,
right?
And so in this way, it's like, you know, they are asking people to, you know, give their sacrifice to the goddess, but at the same time, it's like these men are controlling her, right? So they're the ones, even though she's the one who is, like, has all the cards, and it's the one who's making them all sick. Like, the scene with the sheep, I did not need to see that. Like, there were four moments in this whole film that I did not need to see. The first one being the birth of the sheep that's, like, all diseased. Like,
yeah, that was sad. Yeah,
that was very sad. Did not need to see that. But it was just, it was so interesting. And then when you get to like this very, this very, like, well-constructed shack of, like, you know, dead, dried out wheat that Andrea had, like, all her potions and things. And then you realize that, like, it's making everything sick. Like, it's not that it's inedible. It's like, it's actually poisoning everybody. That I thought was an interesting thing because of, like you said, she would have given everything freely. Like, she would have given, you know, her gifts freely. But they are the ones who, like, it was the men who kind of perverted it. And
yeah. I mean,
which is another thing about religion.
Yeah. Cause when they come to the island, it's not like, I mean, she's the one making it inhabitable. you know, through mm-hmm. her whatever divine power she has, like she's making mm-hmm. it a place that can live, because obviously without her influence, it goes to, you know, maybe it's not. I mean, maybe, yeah. I don't know, maybe that's not exactly clear, but that's kind of how I chose to read it, was like, again, it's just like the world we live in. Like, the earth does not need us. You know, we need the earth. We need the natural world. So when we talk about, like, we're killing the earth, like, no, we're making it inhospitable to us. And so, and that's their actions, their greed, their, you know, desire for power, particularly with, I feel like Malcolm isn't necessarily, Quinn is obviously the villain of this film. Like, he's a very fucked up person, and does a lot of fucked up stuff. I think Malcolm has good intentions, but it's, again, it's like Summer Isle where it's failing and he doesn't know how to fix it. And letting her go for some reason isn't like his thought. Like, hey, maybe we should, sorry, we made a mistake. We're humans. You know, we're pieces of shit. Like, so let's let her go and let her be free and do what she wants. So it's kind of, this film, I think, is a real metaphor for, like, you know, this sort of climate, not climate change, but just like environmental catastrophes that are happening that, again, like, if we all die off because the water isn't good and we've killed all the bees and we've killed all these things and we can't, you know, we can no longer get sustenance from the natural world, the earth will just sit here for another million years and heal itself without us. And like that things can return to normal without humanity. I think it will take time. And I feel like that's kind of one of the discussions happening in this, is just that sort of, when she does the testing, the potions, it reminded me the way it bubbled up. It reminded me of the conversations about the oceans becoming more acidic and, you know, the oil spills that are happening. And, you know, you just have Flint, Michigan, for instance, you know, what's still going on there all these years later. Like, if that was every city in the country, where, you know, what will life be like? You know, how will we sustain?
God, I love Fright School because I love Fright School sometimes because this is just such a rich interpretation of like the film. Because again, that future, you know, that future of what this will happen if this climate emergency is allowed to continue, is going to be a hellscape, is going to be like violence. And so seeing that is, you know, that added into it. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily the intention, right, of, you know, talking about it in this way, because it's, you know, you kind of get to the stuff with the goddess towards the end of the film, and most of it is about like this, it's the mystery of where's Jennifer, right? Where's Jennifer?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, so I read this article, Cthulhu Doesn't Hate You, a critical analysis of Apostle, the 2018 Netflix original film directed by Gareth Evans. And it's kind of talking about like the, again, like we were saying earlier, the tension in like the Wicker Man is Christianity, is faith coming against a, you know, a pagan belief. Also, you know, kind of his stoicism and their like mm-hmm. abject joy. The mm-hmm. Witch, again, is about Christianity, but, you know, about sort of like, you know, that control of women, the domination of women. It's darker, it's colder, harsher, you know, so you kind of see that showing up here. But what I liked about this article, and one of the things that they are talking about, is mm-hmm. that kind of talks about the Eucharist, mm-hmm. you know, the Thanksgiving idea, thankfulness for Christ's sacrifice. Is offered. And so the Christian belief is that by partaking in this gift, a truer life than the mortal one is bestowed upon us. The bread and wine becomes flesh and blood, given as supernatural nourishment. Apostle treats flesh and blood similarly. The goddess can only survive when she is fed blood. The cultists bleed themselves for her. We're told that Malcolm attempted to feed her from himself. We actually see that too. Curiously, the goddess attempts to resist the offerings that are given to her unwillingly, the pulped corpses of the murdered. I guess that they're interpreting that like at the end where they're kind of force feeding her and she's like choking and trying to get Thomas to help release her. So the core tension of the film is not between paganism and Christianity, but rather between Eucharistic self-offering and mechanistic consumption. The true antagonist, Malcolm's brother Quinn, tells us that he was the one that thought to imprison the goddess. He calls her a machine. The food he gives her is simply fuel, and the life of the island is just a product of the machine's operations. This attitude, the mechanistic attitude that nature is just a resource to be plundered, is contrasted with the Eucharistic attitude. Food and nature are more than fuel and resource. When approached reverently, they're a self-offering of themselves. They are gifts. So Thomas, in the film's conclusion, rediscovers his faith in the act of total self-giving, sacrifices himself so that, you know, the girls can escape the dying island. But then, you know, at the end, he's sort of Christ-like there in the grass, becomes sort of a new guardian of the place, I'm guessing, as the leaves and things invaded him. I don't know if that's like the spirit of the goddess or whatnot. But I thought that was an interesting reading that I think kind of goes back again to that, the conversation in like natural religions of like the world, the earth is here, it gives of itself, and eventually we return to it, we give ourselves back to replenish, and that there's that relationship, and if it's harmed, as is clearly happening in the world we live in now, and has been happening, you know, over the 100, 200 years of industrialization, you know, this, it's like breaking that relationship, making it possible for both to endure. We cannot both like live in the, like this way. It's like the toxicity. Like, I don't know. What am I trying to say? Like,
one, are you saying one does not live on bread alone, but on every
word? I don't
know
what I'm trying to say.
I was like, that's scripture. I don't know if you're quoting that, but
yeah.
But yeah, Thomas at the end, where he, you know, he basically becomes the new guardian, or he, because I don't know if you saw, but he was starting to heal, like his wounds were healing, and he was like,
yeah, and the grass and stuff was like kind of, and his eyes changed to look kind of like hers, that same color.
Mm-hmm, Francis Conroy, like it was just very.
Yeah,
I say that with the utmost reverence for Francis Conroy. I actually thought it was her. I thought that the goddess was her, goddess, guardian, whatever she is. It was just so fascinating. And then like the stuff with Jeremy, like his death is particularly cruel and gruesome.
Oh yeah,
because he's simple. Like, I mean, I think in that moment, he is the fool, right? He's the one who, he is the fool. And I didn't realize it until Quinn, like, caught her, or, like, confronted her Fionn. But, like, yeah, if she has a child, it's going to be, like, that sheep, right? Like,
quite possibly, yeah. I mean, we don't know, but that is, I think, hinted at.
Yeah, and... and then just like the denial of it. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I kept trying to figure out, where do I know this guy from? Where do I know this guy from? And I'm like, oh, because he's Prince Charles's Welsh tutor.
Oh, wow.
In The Crown.
In The Crown.
In The Crown, which makes sense because he, Michael Sheen, you know, is Welsh himself. And he is very much like he does him and Matthew Rhys. They do love to support their fellow Welsh countrymen. So it made it made complete sense when they were like talking and stuff. I'm like, oh, I love this Welsh accent. There's a certain cruelty and harshness and harshness in it. But yeah, like exactly what you said, though, about Thomas at the end becoming Christ-like himself. And then I don't, and this is just some scripture, you know, scriptural, texture, take it for what you will. Don't know if this was the intention, but, Thomas, called Didymus in the Bible, also known as Doubting Thomas, he was the one who was like, you know, I don't believe that Jesus came to you guys. I'm only going to believe him if like I can actually see his wounds and put my finger in the hole. And then Jesus came to him and was just like, hey, like, I'm here. What the heck? Like, they told you. Why didn't you believe? And so to kind of hear him as, you know, Thomas being this doubting figure of, you know, having his faith, like, leave him in the beginning, and then ultimately to be embraced by, like, the natural religion, right? The true, and he himself become a god, or become the guardian of the island. It's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That's, yeah, that's great. I had not really even considered sort of like that biblical, obviously, you know, his Christianity and his, like, lack of faith or his loss of faith is important to his character, but that's a really good point. You know, Joe bringing that,
it's that Catholic catechism. School girl. Yeah. You know, bring that catechism
right in. overall, I also enjoy this movie. I think it's, I think when looking at the ancestors of the Wicker Man and Blood on Satan's Claw and Witchfinder General and, you know, those films that are sort of, you know, again, considered those defining moments in folk horror. I think looking at this, we have Apostle stands very much firmly in that tradition of sort of darker, you know, and kind of where the witch goes. Mm-hmm. Midsommar is sort of the other side of that, more joyful side of it. Yeah, because they both came out around the same time, right? This was 2018. Was it Midsommar 2018?
Yeah, or Midsommar 2019? Was, I believe, 2018, yeah. 2018 or 2019.
Somewhere, or kind of in the same, in the same vein. So it's interesting. We're still kind of having these conversations and, like, yeah, there's two very clear kind of paths, at least currently between. I mean, not to say that they don't blur. Obviously, there are darker moments, certainly, in Midsommar. But, you know, I think Apostle stands as sort of, you know, an interesting, very dark, bloody, gory, but has kind of a profound, has something profound to say in the end. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed it. This was the second time I had watched it, because I did see it when it first came out, because everybody was, like, talking about it, of course. But it kind of fit perfectly in with what we've been talking about the last couple weeks. So super fun.
Yay. It sure did. Ultimately, I'm glad that I watched it, but I still, like, it shook me in places that I was not expecting. And I think for me, what was so unnerving about it was that I thought it was going to be one thing and it was something completely different. And I can't, like, I'm still shaken by that. So
that's awesome. I love that. I love this, that you had that kind of experience. So, all right. Well, I'm looking forward to next week. We'll sort of be wrapping this up. I mean, we're going to do one, you know, our Halloween special is also, I think, considered, I'm considering it part of folk horror legend, just again in sort of a different way. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be our 5-year anniversary special as well. Dear listener, can you believe it? You've been listening to us yak away for 5 years. 5 whole years. I look forward to celebrating with you and looking back on you know, the last 5 years, what we've done, what we've accomplished, how much we've horrified you.
I can't wait.
Alrighty. What's that?
Should we get each other gifts? Horror gifts? No. The gift of each other's company?
Right. This is the gift. What are you talking about? I am the gift. maybe I'll win you some kind of goofy prize at Not Scary Farm, and then
I would love that. You know what you could do? I could give you a receptacle and a piece of bread, and you could just bleed into it. How about that?
That's great. I mean, that is a gift. That is, like, a sacrificial gift from me that I made to you. Yeah. Delightful. All right, that was Apostle. So we will be back next week, and you know, keeping spooky season trucking. So much fun. Good night, Joe.
Good night, Joshua. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davy Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.